brandy. I enjoy being a girl. When someone with eyes that smolder says he loves every silken curl that falls on my ivory shoulder, I enjoy being a girl. When I hear a complimentary whistle that greets my bikini by the sea, I turn and I glower and I bristle, but I'm happy to know the whistle's meant for me. I'm strictly a female, female, and my future I hope will be in the home of a brave, free male who'll enjoy being a guy, having a girl.
I feel so pink and frilly now. I'm going to have to go buy some bonbons. So I guess I'll talk to y'all later. No, not really. I'll have someone bring me some bonbons now. And my fluffy little dog called Fifi with a bow in his hair. Good morning, everybody. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And that, of course, was my gal Frank with I Enjoy Being a Girl. One of the most brilliant covers ever. I'm Melody Silverwolf, and my lovely co-host, Ani Haynes, will be joining us in just a moment. And this morning, we have a very important topic to talk about with you. My guest this morning is Jane White from the Downtown Women's Center, and we're going to talk about the very, very serious and likely major impact on women's reproductive freedom that faces every woman in this nation after today, because it's looking very, very likely that Samuel Alito, called Alito by Sam Cedar, very amusingly, is going to be confirmed to the Supreme Court, despite the fact that he is a fascist nutcase who does not support the Constitution, who believes in the power of the unitary executive, which basically means that he believes that whoever sits in the Oval Office is God and can do whatever he wants. So, we fear greatly, and with good reason, that after this person is confirmed to the Supreme Court, that reproductive freedom is going to be one of those quaint phrases from the past, sort of like breach of promise, that nobody even thinks about anymore, and they sort of snicker and say, oh, how quaint, when you bring it up. Reproductive freedom? Oh, yes, we used to have that before we got those uppity women back in their place where they belong, in the kitchen and the bedroom, pregnant and barefoot. So, yes, this is a bad thing, and we have a lot to talk about this morning. And here's Ani.
I would actually argue that we don't have reproductive freedom now.
Well, we have a little, but we're going to have even less.
But I would say at least we have a guaranteed, you know, constitutionally guaranteed right to abortion.
Well, actually, we have a... That's the argument. Do we have it?
Right.
Is it in the Constitution?
And I'm just going to go ahead and state it in the affirmative.
I believe that the Fourth Amendment does, because as someone pointed out, I was listening to talk radio a few weeks ago, I think it was Tom Hartman, pointed out that during the time of the Founding Fathers, privacy meant like having, being alone when you use the toilet or something. That wasn't a term that was in use at that time. What they said in the Fourth Amendment is what we mean today by privacy, and it is in there. But because it doesn't say the word privacy and the right to an abortion, mm-hmm. some literalists have said, oh, it's not in the Constitution, so we can just wipe it out.
Well, yeah, there you go. Here we are 33 years past road, and down the road from Roe,
yes.
as it were. And, there are all of these very serious challenges being sort of brought up state by state. The incredible and proposed for abortion restriction laws in some states, notably Michigan and North Dakota.
Like getting your daddy's, your husband's permission before you can have an abortion?
That's from Casey. I mean, that was a law that was proposed and passed and struck down years ago. I mean, mm-hmm. we're talking new ones.
Oh, well, no, that's one that's come up again.
Oh, well, you know, the once in future law proposal. I was thinking more specifically of laws proposed in Michigan. For example, an organization called Michigan Chooses Life says it will endorse a drive to put a measure on the 2006 Michigan ballot that legally defines a person as existing at the moment of conception mm-hmm. in the state constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then there was a bill in Indiana not so long ago, which the man says he's going to revive, that basically would require women to report all miscarriages to the police.
But wait, there's more.
That's pretty ridiculous. And he's going to reintroduce the bill. That's scary.
South Dakota. In 2005, South Dakota legislature passed 5 laws restricting abortion. A bill to ban abortion outright failed by 1 vote in 2004. But the stigma attached to the procedure is very much alive. This is from an article, the Boston Globe.
But as it is, you can't get an abortion in South Dakota anyway. You have to go to Denver because there's no clinics.
Because there's no providers.
I know someone who lives there.
Well, yeah, and that's actually something I'd love to talk with Jane about.
Yes, indeed.
When we actually say, hey, Jane, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you're here.
As you can tell, Melody and I have no rant control.
We're a little upset about this.
Well, there's
this
a lot topic. To rant about.
Despite being past the age when we might personally likely need these services, that's not the point, you know.
I'm not quite past that age, but let's just face facts.
And certainly your daughter's not.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, in fact, we need to be concerned for all women in this country and for the future generations, for sure. So welcome, Jane.
Thank you
very much for being with us this morning. Let's start, I guess, just by I'd love to hear from you what your take of the lay of the land, how dire is the situation, what is, in your view, someone who's very much on the ground in the struggle, what are you seeing right now as the biggest challenges? How do we even focus what we need to do at this time?
It's a huge problem. I mean, what strikes me as a feminist from the late 60s is that the hope for freedom for the future for women has been constantly battered down because you don't have freedom unless you have reproductive freedom. If you can't control when your pregnancies happen, you cannot choose to make a career, choose to leave the state and leave that boyfriend who's been beating you all through high school. You get stuck. And the first pregnancies mm-hmm. that happen to you because, of course, birth control isn't paid for and you don't have health insurance, you're stuck having a baby mm-hmm. with a young man who maybe you really shouldn't have a baby with. And this is happening, especially in the center of our country, everywhere. It's taking away women's freedom
yes.
everywhere. It's the hope that was started to be breathed into our culture is being blown out right now and really being blown down right now. All the little flames, I just see them, you know, kind of twinkling, and of course the coasts are good. I had an abortion before Roe v. Wade, you know, in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I flew there from Ohio.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, you know,
because
that's
you
what we used to do.
So. Yeah, but you were lucky enough that you knew what to do and
exactly.
you had the money to do it.
Exactly.
You know, and a lot of women, even now, when abortion's ostensibly legal, a lot of places don't have the money to, well, the procedure is fairly expensive, but then they have to travel, sometimes stay overnight because of whatever laws or requirements, you know, the way the
appointments
are.
All the laws,
yeah.
All those laws. Now, we in Oregon and Washington and California, we get A's, according mm-hmm. to NAREL, because we have a tradition of the people of Oregon vote down parental consent laws, which are mm-hmm. terrible for a high percentage of youngsters who cannot tell their parents because they'd be kicked out of school, they would have to leave high school, they would be beat
or
up.
Or because one of their parents is responsible for their pregnancy.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes
or
from
complicit,
bad to worse.
Or complicit.
You know, at our clinic, so many young girls come in with their mom or their dad or, you know,
their
an aunt.
Or someone, yes.
You know, someone. And the few who don't have a very hard life.
Well, and I think that, you know, I think most people agree that, it's by far the best procedure for a teen to tell her parents when she has any kind of a pregnancy, you know, wanted or unwanted.
If she can.
But yeah. I think so. The reality is that not everybody lives in Leave It to Beaver land, and not everyone's family is like the Cleavers, and you know, that not every girl
I don't know
girl
the Cleavers would have done, dealt with that very well anyways.
Well, exactly, or whoever.
Well, when we fought the last battle over parental consent, there was the family that lost their daughter who was a middle-class, getting all A's girl who didn't want to tell her parents, and she had an illegal abortion, and she died.
Yeah, yeah,
that
and it was
more
this,
than
it,
we know.
Whether the parents were going to be supportive or not, she couldn't face the
humiliation.
What she thought,
what
was
she thought
disappointment.
Look
to
around
her
at the shame. Mm-hmm. That's what we do at my mm-hmm. clinic. We mm-hmm. just start chipping off the shame because people walk in with such shame mm-hmm. and such a burden from this negativity put on them. They are the bravest people in the world, deciding to take the destiny of their lives in their hands instead of going along with all the bitterness and shame in this country.
Well, you know, absolutely. I had an abortion when I was a young woman. Fortunately, I lived in California, and fortunately, the abortion that I had was a couple of years post Roe v. Wade, so it was perfectly legal. And not only that, it was paid for by Medi-Cal, mm-hmm. which, of course, is a thing of the past as far as I know. And that was a very, you know, non-traumatic experience for me. And I can't imagine the alternative. If I had gone ahead with that pregnancy, it would have been life-changing in a very negative way.
It's the safest procedure in the United States. It is at least 10 times safer than childbirth. There have been 20 mm-hmm. deaths from childbirth in Oregon mm-hmm. in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. There's never been a death from an abortion.
Well, not mm-hmm. to mention...
You're forcing a person to have a more dangerous procedure. That's mm-hmm. just number one.
Not right. to mention the risks of pregnancy to a lot of women who have diabetes or
then
blood
it's
pressure.
A thousand times
they
safer.
They get toxemia and they get all these, you know, I mean, all kinds of diseases that people might have, like Crohn's or whatever, can be drastically aggravated by pregnancy. And, you know, it's not about convenience as much as the right wing might like to
paint
it that way.
Health issue.
That's
and
right.
people try to make it a religious issue, a moral issue. It's
a
public
civil rights
health
issue.
I mean, the real reason we got Roe v. Wade is because women were dying. They were mm-hmm. there was a whole ward in every single city hospital of women dying from
yes.
illegal abortions. And that gradually was being known to the, you know, the doctors mm-hmm. and the legislators. And, you know, if we shut down abortion everywhere, that would come back. So I've always thought that they didn't want to shut down abortion everywhere. They just wanted to use it mm-hmm. for their political control.
Well, that's what some people say, for example, is they say, well, the right wing really needs Roe v. Wade to use as a haymaker, so they're not going to outlaw Roe v. Wade. They're just going to chip away at it until,
right, make
you
it
know,
hard.
Not right now, 87% of the counties in the U.S. have no abortion provider. They'll make it so 98% don't have an abortion provider, or 95, or as close as they can get. And all of these restrictions and really expensive and special insurance and blah, 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 so that it's very hard to get one. I think that may be true. But even so, that's unacceptable, even if it's not overturned.
And that sort of way of looking at things or approaching things is certainly what is going on in South Dakota. Again, I'm going to go ahead and quote from this Boston Globe article. You know, so there was a bill to ban abortion outright last year. It fell by one vote. But what is happening now, so this is they have a 17-member abortion task force made up largely of staunch abortion opponents.
I bet they're all white guys, too.
I don't know, and I'm not going to conjecture. So there's plenty to just sort of go with right here. Issued recommendations to the legislature last month that included some of the most restrictive abortion requirements in the country. The task force report states that science defines life as beginning at conception and recommends a law that gives fetuses the same protection that children get after birth, thus banning abortion. But until such a ban, the task force recommends requiring that a woman watch an ultrasound of her fetus, that doctors warn women about the psychological and physical dangers of abortion, and that women receive psychological counseling before the abortion, among other measures. And
what kind of psychological counseling would that be, I wonder?
I mean, this just really floors me. The being forced to watch an ultrasound floors me. You know, to be counseled specifically about psychological and physical dangers of abortion, as Jane was saying, an extremely safe procedure.
It's so infantilizing, for one thing.
To mm-hmm. say the least, yeah.
Because us women's, you know, so, we don't know what's good for us. We need those guys to tell us what to do.
Or we need somebody else. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there are some women in the leadership of the anti-choice movement, and that's always floored me. But it happens.
Yes. It's like black people being in the KKK.
Well, I was going to say it's a little like Stockholm syndrome. It's like you love your oppressor so much. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If I could just finish though, this article, you know, goes on to then talk about Alito. The leaders on both sides of the debate focus on the Supreme Court nomination hearings of Alito. As they're watching states like South Dakota pass more and more restrictions that might be upheld by a more conservative Supreme Court. Alito wrote the blueprint 20 years ago on how to dismantle and eventually overturn Roe. says Nancy Keenan, who's the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America. And that's referring to a memo that Alito wrote in 85 while he was working for the Reagan administration, in which he lays out sort of the plan of pretty much just as we were talking about, maybe not completely outright overturning abortion, but to chip away state by state at the access to abortion and how you can accomplish the same thing without the fervor of doing something as national policy.
It's like turning up the heat under the water and the frogs are boiling in. Mm-hmm. You know?
It's
very
like
slowly.
So I was hoping, Jane, if you wanted to comment on that memo and sort of looking at this sort of strategy of that state-by-state chipping away and what that really says and does to Roe.
Well, there definitely is a state-by-state chipping away. It's been going on forever. It's picking up speed now. It's like the paybacks are coming in. Okay, we've supported your Republican Party now. We want to see some action in the anti-abortion front because we've got our little people who go to church every Sunday who we have hypnotized mm-hmm. with this, you know, brand of Christianity instead of helping people who are poor or, you know, living for peace like Christianity is really supposed to be about. And so bit by bit, it is taken away. And, you know, there are different effects in different areas. And I'm almost thinking, you know, if you look at the big picture, that on the coast, states that already vote Democratic, you're going to have progressive thinking, feeling, women-led families just going to. Abandoning those inner states. Because those inner states are just trouble for women's freedom. And so it just means that more Senate seats, more territory mm-hmm. is just taken by mm-hmm. them. And we're marginalized, you know, mm-hmm. to a few states on the margins yes. of this country.
We're
with global
become,
warming, we're going to yeah. fill up with water anyway.
We're going to become a conservative sandwich with the conservatives in the middle and the liberal states on the outside.
Well, I know. It kind of makes you, you know, think in those terms. But I also think that, you know, it might just backfire on them.
I think it's going to myself. I mean, we know from looking at, you know, feminism and progress around the globe that when women have access to education and to control over their fertility, that conditions in that country improve dramatically. There's nothing that you can possibly do for women that improves their situation more than educating them and giving them access to a means of supporting themselves. In other words, ability to create little businesses or have access to resources where they can support their family and to be able to control their fertility. Everybody is better
Absolutely.
Off.
Absolutely. It's one thing that's often said that's measurable in all countries around the world is the longer a woman puts off having her first child mm-hmm. will directly come back on how well her children
yes.
do in their lives.
Yes, I mean, you have to have a chance to establish yourself in the world and get some kind of means of supporting yourself, mm-hmm. et cetera. Whether or not you're married or have a partner, that person could die. A meteor could hit your house. I mean, you never know what's going to happen.
You never
and
know.
You have to be able to support your kids.
That's right.
And it's because you never know what's going to happen, and it's because of all of these factors that actually create reality in a woman's life, that the right and access to abortion must be protected and must be preserved. Because as someone who's worked in an abortion providing clinic for 4 years myself, I have talked to really hundreds of women about why they were in the clinic receiving services. And, you know, no one planned an abortion, right?
No, I don't
Nobody.
Think that.
No, implant an abortion.
I think I'll go have an abortion today.
If I had a
nope.
nickel for every woman that said, well, I'm really against abortion,
mm-hmm.
but, well.
Reality is when it happens to you.
You know,
walk
these
a mile in my
certain
shoes.
Things mm-hmm. have happened, and I'm not like the other women, but I really need this because I have been, good, pure, virtuous, and now some things have happened, and I need this. And the conversations with those women about how, you know, before you judge what everyone else is here for, maybe they all have reasons like you. There are some aha moments mm-hmm. of
yeah.
just
maybe.
Profound
aha
depth.
Moments.
Well, you know, I used to know a woman when I lived in California many years ago who was my neighbor, and she had an abortion while she was living across the hall from me. And she was only about, 22 or so, and she told me it was her fifth abortion, which I found a little surprising, a little disconcerting. But, you know, hey, that's how she managed her fertility. Is that any worse than taking birth control pills? I mean, it's between her and her doctor. It's her health that she's, affecting by having so many abortions. Probably not good for you to have five abortions in such a short period of time, but...
That probably doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not go there.
It may be better for you than taking birth control pills, for example.
Let's talk about that, and let's ask Jane. Mm-hmm. That's something that we hear quite popularly.
Because we assume that was an incredible story. I try to tell
every patient I talk to every day that the lies that they hear about scar tissue and abortions in movies like 24 Karat.
Oh, yes.
In books by Danielle Steele are... lies. They're unscientific.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A DNC is a women's life-saving procedure that's used in a number of situations. For example, after childbirth, if a little piece of your placenta gets left in the uterus, in the old days, that was 100% fatal.
Yeah, that's right.
Today, you do a little DNC, remove that little piece of placenta, it's 100% everybody lives, practically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the DNC is not looked at as this thing that you should only do once per year in the medical community. Mm-hmm. It is a very simple little procedure that we've been measuring with a magnifying glass for 30 years, and we're... The women of Soviet Union had an average of 9 abortions each in the 80s and 90s when they couldn't afford birth control. No change in their fertility.
Exactly. So, after I thought about it, this was a long time ago, I knew her. After I thought about it, I thought, well, it's just as, maybe it makes more sense for her to do that than to take the pill or use something.
Point is, it's her life and she gets to figure out how she's going to deal with it.
Right, and it's not our place to judge. Having beaten and raped me, I cannot speak to them. And the judge will say, because that's a good reason, I'll let you have an abortion because I'm going to sign this paper. And so there's parental consent laws that they try to put through without this judicial bypass. And again, I'm thinking, is this one of their tricks so that they're passing the law but they're not really getting it done? Why? They know that it needs a judicial bypass, just like partial birth needed a medical excuse, and they didn't put it there.
Intact DNA, as we like to say.
Yeah.
We try not to use that term.
and so they pushed it back to the lower court, just giving them the instructions, don't you know we've already decided that parental consent is perfectly legal, as long as you have a judicial bypass.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, the judicial bypass, I think I might have been had the presence of mind and the ability to, if I had needed an abortion at that young age, to go to a judge and all that sort of thing. But I think a lot of young women just couldn't bring themselves to.
No.
They wouldn't know how to, or they'd be too scared, or they wouldn't have the money to take the bus to the courthouse or whatever.
I'm 39 years old. I'm intimidated if I have to talk to a judge about something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty determined. I probably would have done it, but I would have been scared to death.
But I'm thinking... why do we need to scare our young women?
We don't.
Why do we need to traumatize young women?
We don't.
Why do we not trust a young woman to decide if she's ready to become a mother or not?
Well, for example, people always say, I have to give permission to the principal at my daughter's high school for her to take an aspirin, so how come she can have an abortion without my consent? That's a good question. I say it's skewed the wrong way. I think somebody who's 14 should be able to make their own decisions about their own health care regarding the aspirin as well as the abortion, and so that's not a very, very good argument in my opinion. But we have a caller. We should talk to that person, eh?
Oh, let's do that. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello, caller. Hello? Caller? You still there?
Huh. Well, our engineering pixie will work on the Telos phone system.
503-231-8187 is our number if you'd like to contribute to this conversation we're having about Samuel Alito likely being confirmed to the Supreme Court and the consequent disappearing of what's left of our reproductive freedoms.
I think it's still extremely important to call all... call your senators, call Wyden.
Although it's looking highly unlikely that the filibuster will happen
let's
now.
Let's just say.
You can still try.
Call.
Yes.
Because, if we go, it's already a done deal, well, then there's no hope.
Well, at least Wyden's going to vote no. That's something, I suppose. But the filibuster could still happen if we press.
But to encourage a little bit stronger action than voting no, because we are, in fact, I mean, and abortion rights, goodness knows, an extremely important part of why we need to fight Alito, but not the only part
of why we fight Alito.
But it is what we're focused on.
Well,
this
morning. We're going to be facing a parental notification bill this year.
In Oregon?
Yeah, they tried to do that last session, did they not?
This is coming up, from, the voters getting signatures.
Oh, the initiative thing.
And they've got their title. They're moving it through. It's probably going to be on the ballot. And it's always a hard win. We're going to be devoting, every ounce of our strength and having to raise $1 million, which is ridiculous to have to raise $1 million.
Well, that's basically been the rights agenda here in Oregon for a long time. If you look at what the OCA's been doing, yeah, they keep us busy one session after another with these ridiculous initiatives. Let's make gay people wear pink triangles in public. I mean, please. Okay,
oh, wait,
caller.
That's already been done.
But they'd like to revive it. They thought it was a good idea.
I know. They learned lessons and decided to repeat them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead, take a caller again. Let's try you this time. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello, caller. Caller.
Sadly enough, if you are calling and you're on hold in any kind of way, you are about to be disconnected as we reboot our beloved phone
system. Do apologize. Yes, in fact, last night, speaking of, they thought it was a good idea on the Daily Show, there was a skit wherein this fellow was pretending to look for a job, and he was just said his reason is because his boss was horrible, and he described him to one interviewer as being like a cross between Willy Wonka and Hitler. And I thought that was a pretty good description of George W. Bush, actually. If you can imagine a cross between Willy Wonka and Hitler, I don't know.
I see no Willy Wonka here. We were just talking about the parental consent laws. I understand that the vast majority of states have parental consent laws.
Yes.
We are one of six states without?
Seven.
Damn. That's,
I know.
That's what I have to say about it.
I know.
That is really scary.
We live in just one of the handful of states that does not have restrictions.
Yeah.
And it's because the people of Oregon have fought them back.
And right. Is there any kind of correlation between the parental consent laws and the number or percentage, rather, of teens who get an abortion in those states? Are you aware of that? So it doesn't...
Well, there have been, when some big changes happened in other states, like Minnesota, I believe they did the study 10 years ago, and the birth rate went up for teens after parental consent went in.
Great. I do know that in the Netherlands, where they have very, very well-structured sex education beginning in appropriate ways in kindergarten, and of course they don't have the kind of draconian laws that we have, they have one quarter of the teenage pregnancy rate, less than one quarter of the sexually transmitted disease rate, and the birth rate for teens is dramatically, dramatically below a quarter of what ours is. So, obviously... education pays. And of course, we here in Portland, at least, we have very, very, very sketchy sex education, even at the high school level.
And all this abstinence only is going through all the education, and that's because of Bush and his cronies. I mean, I was just reading this article that an 80% of the abstinence-only curriculum has just unscientific lies in it.
Just laugh at
absolutely.
It. Like, since when did telling somebody, there's this really neat thing I know you all really want to do, but don't do it? That's so ineffective. I mean, come on. Whoever thought that would work?
And it's presenting all manner of misinformation, all manner of false concepts around safe sex, transmissions of STDs, what sex is. It's such a complex issue as to why abstinence-only education is, well...
a failure.
Stupid.
Except for the people who promote it. Well, this morning, for example, I heard on the radio that a kid in Lake Oswego, who I think was a junior high school student, somebody as a joke, went to the Trojan website and had them send him a sample pack of condoms, which for some reason he received it. I guess he goes to a special school or a private school or something. He received it at school, and he opened it in class in front of his classmates. And he was so humiliated that that was on a Friday, and then he couldn't go to school on Monday or Tuesday either because he was so embarrassed. I'm like, So they're condoms. I mean,
help me, Rhonda. Help
my
help
God.
Rhonda.
Like, what's to be so embarrassed
Fools
about?
Of the devil.
That's right.
I mean, good heavens.
I mean, the sad thing
it's
is that
prank.
The biology of woman is that we're here to have at least 20 kids. Because in the times that our bodies were created, mm-hmm. most of our babies died.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I had a relative in the 1700s. She bore 26 kids. She buried 18.
Oh, my goodness.
That was the old days.
Right.
Now we only want to have 2 kids because all the kids, you know, want to go to college. And but yet our bodies want to have 20. And birth control isn't really covered. And it doesn't work 100%.
And I was going to say, no birth control is 100%
birth control.
Effective.
And so our bodies are kind of in the middle of this very natural conflict between mm-hmm. our biology and what the modern world can bear.
And how ironic that here we are with the era of global warming and, you know, the,
global
all the crisis.
Overpopulation.
Yeah, exactly. And then all the people are pressing for women to have lots of children. That's just like suicide.
Suicide.
Nuts. Let's go ahead and
try the caller again.
Try once again with our beloved and decrepit phone system. good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. Does it?
Yes.
Downtown. Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello. Does a downtown clinic train volunteers or any of the other abortion clinics, do they use or train volunteers?
I'll tell you who needs volunteers is NARAL, because NARAL works to protect our political rights. We at the Downtown Women's Center believe that women should be paid for their work.
Oh, yeah.
So we don't do volunteer, sure. And it's very sensitive, you know, we have an average age of working there of like 15 years. But, you know, you work there 2 years, you're still a baby. You know, and so we don't do volunteers.
Well, I was thinking about Planned Parenthood, but my personal problem is my energy and health aren't good, and I can't be a regular volunteer. So I was just wondering don't want you because you just caused.
No, there's
discomfort.
Lots of different things to do, and NARAL works at protecting our rights all the time. Their number is 2.
Oh, that's okay. I can.
Okay, you've got it there.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
And it may not be relevant, I don't know, but I'm just curious about, can a female get a sterilization operation if she wants it, or is there difficulty in obtaining that in this country in the present times?
So. Well, you know, in the old days, of course, your husband had to sign and blah, blah.
I mean, now.
But not today, but there is...
what if you're single?
You're single, it's okay.
It's
the only problem is if you're young.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, some young women have gotten it. They have to work hard, establish a relationship with a doctor over a several-year period, mm-hmm. make it very clear that they never want to have children, never did want to have children, and that can happen. But I hear all the time stories of women who have just had their third child. They're 24, and the doctor refuses to do a tubal ligation. Maybe doesn't refuse, like, all, you know, says no, but talks them out of it. And we people listen to doctors as an authority figure. Mm-hmm. We allow them to talk us into things. You know, we don't learn to be assertive against authority like
mm-hmm.
that.
Sure.
But if you were really assertive and you have had 2 kids and you're over 21,
mm-hmm.
I would expect that you could find a doctor to do a tubal ligation.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
I had a friend back in the 80s who, the mid-80s, late-80s, who was about 24, and she'd been trying since she was 18 to find a doctor to give her a tubal ligation. Finally, she had no children. Finally got someone to do it. And, you know, basically, she said, well, the doctors say, oh, well, I don't want you to change your mind and come back and blame me. Well, they don't say that when you have any other kind of surgery. You know, if, for example, I know some women have such a serious history of breast cancer that some doctors recommend to them that they have, preemptive mastectomies, you know, which I think is extremely drastic and radical, to have a mastectomy on spec just in case you get breast cancer due to your history. And yet, doctors say, oh, well, you might come back and regret this later. And, you know, well, hey, that's you made your choice, so you have to live with it. If 20 years from now I regret having that tubal ligation at 22, well, I guess that's my lookout, isn't it? Once again, it's infantilizing women, and I'm just so sick
that's
of it.
Sort of the bottom line. It's it's infantilizing women.
I mean, that's you have right. to make your choice and live with the consequences.
503-231-8187, the number to call if you'd like to join in the conversation. The last caller asked about volunteering. You know, how can people actually physically now defend our rights to abortion? Who can we volunteer with?
Do you have escorts at your clinic? No. So,
and
NARAL's a great suggestion.
Right. And as I was saying, We were just about to give the number out for NARAL. Mm-hmm. And Jane, could you just go ahead and do that for listeners
sure.
that might want to just hear it over the air?
NARAL's 223-4510. And they're just the nicest group of people. They've got a real homey office. They have all sorts of, you know, different things that you can do. Come in for a few hours and arrange papers, make some phone calls. It's very comfortable, very welcoming.
Very nice.
And isn't their website Pro-Choice Oregon? Or is it? I think it is. Prochoiceoregon.org.
That could be a Google
but
search.
Yes, yeah. Do give them a call, 503-223-4510. Now more than ever, they need all of our help.
Let's go ahead and take another caller this morning. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I just tuned in. I haven't been part of the whole discussion here since I just dropped the kids off at school.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you folks have spoken to, you mentioned parental consent. Yesterday, I had the medication at school scenario where I wanted to provide an over-the-counter medication for my son. And they said, well, no, it's got to be in the original packaging, and you have to sign the consent. And the reason is for liability purposes for mm-hmm.
pesky lawyers.
And I just wonder how the liability question for any other medical services comes into play. And if that's the big hang-up for or the big barrier for parental consent laws is really liability.
Well, that's a really good question, Jane.
And no, it doesn't relate. There is no more liability for doing standard of care, good medical procedures on a youngster doing a legal procedure than there is for an oldster. However, the anti-choice always puts words into their laws that makes the liability go up if they pass their laws. They define that the liability goes up. If the doctor does do an abortion on a 17-year-old from another state without getting the written consent of the parents, this doctor will be sued for $250,000. They write in liabilities. And they also write in criminal offenses.
Mm-hmm.
But as it is in the normal, you know, state of affairs, there is no more liability for a youngster, though that's a good thought. But no, that's not the reason. And, you know, youngsters, you know, and we're talking 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds, that's who we're mainly talking about. There aren't many 15-year-olds and under who get abortions, thank goodness. And a lot of them, there's trouble. There's trouble with abuse.
Yeah.
But the 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds, they can have other medical procedures. It's okay. I mean, the reason why we give carte blanche to 15 and up to be able to have an abortion procedure is really because we have to give a carte blanche to control sexually transmitted diseases. If we don't allow teenagers to go into STD clinics and get treated, oh, you think our chlamydia is bad today? It would be, you know, 100 times worse. And the teenagers know that they are guaranteed that they can get help. They can stop the transmission of diseases that's going through their high schools because their parents won't be told. And that's a big part of this whole issue.
I see. So you say that community welfare
mm-hmm.
and community health trumps that individual liability, maybe.
Yeah, and liability in terms of being sued and the power of your suit to be successful. That liability's very, very low now to do an abortion, say, with a 16-year-old who comes in with her aunt because she can't tell her parents, and she signs her own consent form. Okay, if she was 14, she would have to have her parents there to sign. But she's 16, she can sign herself. There's no more chance of a malpractice suit with that 16-year-old than there is for the 30-year-old who came in after her.
Good.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks
for your call.
Bye-bye.
Well, you know, and I think I may be wrong, but I suspect that if you went and stood outside of Portland High Schools and you asked every student who came out, what's chlamydia? I bet you not very many of them could tell you.
Right.
And that's really, that's appalling.
And since 25% of 17 to 19-year-olds are estimated to have chlamydia, and especially in the big city centers, that's a real shame.
Yes, it is.
And that has everything to do with sex education and actually having a reality-based sex education.
Well, and you know, when we talked about the scar tissue of abortion that's talked about, there is no scar tissue from abortion. There's scar tissue from chlamydia.
Yes.
And the reason is, if you get an infection after an abortion, you know it because you hurt, you feel terrible, you will call your provider.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We've never had a person who didn't call us. We've done 60,000 procedures in the last 30 years. We don't know of one person who can't have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, chlamydia, for 60% of people, it's hidden.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know they have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's happening that whole time that they don't know they have it? Their tubes are getting scarred.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any friends that say, oh, yeah, I had three abortions, that's why I don't have any children, it's because of the chlamydia.
And a lot of people don't even know. Explain a little bit about chlamydia, exactly what it is and how easy it is to get.
Well, it's a bacteria and this is its age. You know, there's different ages of, like, elephants and crocodiles, and there's ages of bacteria. There is gonorrhea in the 60s and 70s, as you two might remember with me, and chlamydia started in the late 80s, early 90s.
So it wasn't around before that.
In a very small numbers, just like gonorrhea is out there in small numbers. And so it's into the pool of sexually active people. It transmits very easily. If you don't wear condoms, if condoms aren't really encouraged, your chances of getting chlamydia are extremely high from one exposure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you might, unless you're having regular STD checks, you might not know that. Or unless people are talking, like sometimes my patients will call and say, you know, my boyfriend just told me I'm exposed to chlamydia. That's a wonderful gift he gave her, just that communication. Because when that doesn't happen, the chlamydia grows and grows, and that young woman may not be able to have children.
Yeah, and I think that it's really amazing to me that we expect people in this society, in such an advanced technological society where, you know, we know that we're falling behind in math and science education compared to other people around the globe. We don't give our teenagers basic information about their own biology. That's criminal.
Well, remember, information is power.
That's it.
And there's a huge power struggle when it comes to empowering young people. We don't want our teenagers to have full knowledge of these things because somehow or another we think it protects them, we control them.
That's ridiculous.
And it's wrong.
It exposes them
to danger is what it does.
A sensible person would think, oh, if I tell my teenager the frank facts about all the, you know, the pitfalls of being sexually active, the reality is probably the teenager would just go, I want to wait a while before I start doing that.
And my whole experience, doing the sensible thing and raising, you know, teenagers often don't come together.
Yeah, I've noticed that, unfortunately.
You know, and that has everything to do with the generation raising, not the generation being raised. Let me go ahead and give out that number again, 503-231-8187, the number to call if you'd like to join us on the air this morning, like this person now. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, if men could get pregnant, abortion would have no restrictions.
That's
on
right.
The planet.
Sort of my feeling.
You could get one at the 7-Eleven in the back room. No waiting. 10-minute procedure.
Sort of at the Jiffy Lube, maybe.
Oh.
And another note would be that you know, the rate of herpes among American adults is 1 in 5.
Yeah.
Most of them don't know they're carrying it either. It's the sex by itself, the sexual activity, or the act of sex is by its nature, biologically, but shall we say, I don't want to say dirty, but messy.
Well, carries risk.
Yeah, it does carry risk. It transmits diseases.
And honesty through education is the only answer to ignorance, the ignorance that we're really foisting upon our children these days. I suffer from HIV, and I've had HIV for almost 20 years, and oh, God, I used to speak to high schools, but I don't have any grounds anymore because now I'm into my 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But something has to be done, and the answer is honesty. And we're being dishonest with ourselves. We're being dishonest with our children. And the results could be fatal and are fatal in many cases.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
Or if not fatal, then dramatically life-changing in a negative way. You
truly,
know.
truly. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Some great points there. I mean, you know, even if you don't end up with HIV or chlamydia or gonorrhea or herpes or any
HPV.
Of those horrible, yeah, then if you end up having to raise an unwanted child, that isn't good for you. It's not good for the child. There have been a lot of studies shown that this could be a causal relationship. It could be coincidence. I don't believe in coincidence, but hey, you know, it could be that with the availability of abortion, that crime rates have dropped. You know, I mean, I think there's something to be said for if you talk to people in penitentiaries, most of them did not have happy childhoods. A lot of times they were abused, abandoned. No, their mom told them how horrible they were, how she didn't want them. You know, it's just not, why force somebody to raise a child they don't want? It doesn't serve anybody.
It doesn't make sense.
And it's just like that bumper sticker says, you know, if you don't trust me with a choice, how can you trust me with a child? You know, good question. I think that those are, you know.
Let's go ahead and take another listener, shall we?
Yes, indeed.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
I'm calling because I've always been interested in how that abortion law is so limited in its focus. In other words, I mean, what if a man don't want to have a baby? You know? And, you know, I go to a party at night and I get drunk and I wind up with some big old fat thing that don't have no job and her dad's an alcoholic, right? And she takes me to her house and her little 14-year-old sister comes out and starts dancing for me, right? And I wind up having an affair with this woman and she gets knocked up, right? Hey, I don't want this baby, you know? Why don't I have a right to say I want an abortion?
That's a brilliant layout of the most misogynist argument I've heard in a long time. Jane, would you like to respond?
First of all, you don't have to deal with the situation she does. You can leave, she can't. Second of all, it's her body that might die in childbirth. It's her body that's going to have to deal pregnancy can.
Like why we have to pay cops so much money? Because you know they're like the least.
Wait a minute! You just put forward a scenario, and now we're addressing it one thing at a time.
Right. I mean, you know, the woman has to be able to choose what happens to her body because that's just sort of the basic human integrity.
I think she should have that right.
I think you need to know how to pull out condoms and take responsibility for your own sexuality, because if you don't want to have children, then just bring out a condom. Just practice safe sex. And your chance of having children that you don't want to have be brought into this world goes down incredibly.
Well, and also in the immortal words of Nancy Reagan, just say no.
And if you're turned on by someone's 14-year-old sister, get help.
Yeah, exactly.
And with that, let's go to that next caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I was going to ask about something else, but with that last caller, I just have to say, I mean, first of all, he referred to it as an affair. I mean, for me, that's rape of a 14-year-old. I mean, I found that pretty disgusting.
I think that was the point. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to bring up something else. I consider myself fairly liberal and I'm very pro-abortion and, you know, think that everyone should have the right to choose. But I don't think having an abortion is the same thing as getting your gallbladder out or getting some other kind of procedure. And I almost had an abortion but decided to have the child, and I'm really happy that I did, even though, you know, I knew the marriage wasn't working out and it, you know, has in fact fallen apart. But
I'm happy that you made a good choice for you and it worked out for you. I think that's your choice and I'm glad that you were able to make it.
Yeah,
right.
I don't think we're saying that abortion is the same as taking a gallbladder out. Every single person relates to having an abortion or having a gallbladder taken out in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of nervy or impolite to get so involved in someone else's private personal life. I mean, if you're her friend, sure. If you work with her, sure. You know, like, because that's community. But for people to worry so much about other people's little invisible embryos seems a little weird to me.
A little,
you know, because she's got her own religion to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
She's got her own morals to deal with. Her own decisions about what she was going to do with this unintended pregnancy, a decision about how she's going to handle that surgery. These are all very personal decisions that are totally defined by who that person is. What I want us to do is to give all people the information and the education and the access to health care so that, and have good people to talk to, so that she can make and he can make the best decisions for his or her body. That's
yeah,
all.
Exactly.
But were you finished with what you...
Well, yeah, no, I understood that. The only other point I wanted to make is I personally, I do have a problem with using abortion as a birth control method.
Well, you know, nobody does that. Or people would be having 4 abortions, 5 abortions, 6 abortions a year. I mean, because we can get pregnant every single month. You have an abortion. Believe me, you can get pregnant 2 weeks later. I have seen it happen many times.
No, but I thought
nobody is using birth control. And what was spoken of before is a young woman had had 5 abortions. And that brought feelings of judgment to my co-host here. And she was just saying, you know, I don't have any business judging this person for the 5 abortions she had. She had her own reasons. That's not my business. It might be my business to make sure she has access to education and information. But, you know, what I've learned working with young women and all ages of women for over 20 years is that you don't tell people what to do, especially young women. You don't say, you've got to go out and get birth control. No, you lay out the facts. You say, you know, you can use birth control and you won't get pregnant. And this is how you do it. And here, I can help you have some pills. Now, that is a totally different thing than a punishing attitude, which I seem to really identify with the Republican Party and the Bush regime. You know, if you're not punishing, if you're giving information, if you're not being judgmental, then you don't box people in corners. People can change. People can learn. People can get a hold of their reproductive life. And, you know, I had several unintended pregnancies in my early 20s and then none until I was like in my 40s, because we get better. That's why young girls always get caught. They're learning. There's always a learning curve. And so for us to just offer information, offer our hands, offer non-judgmental, you know, friendship to people so they can learn how to deal with their bodies is, I think, really the only way to deal with it in a sustainable fashion.
No, I totally agree with that point. I just maybe was confused with the argument previously then.
Well, I just think that it's really, in the case of my friend, my former neighbor, I just, you know, she was well aware of the options of birth control. That just was her, it's her choice. Whether or not I approve of it or think it's the right choice or the best choice, or I would make a different choice, which I certainly have made different choices about my fertility throughout my life. It's really none of my business why I brought up the point. It's just what it boils down to is it's none of our beeswax what other women do with their fertility, you know, and it's none of our beeswax why people choose to have an abortion. Maybe we don't know that they had a grandmother or an aunt who they take after a lot who was highly schizophrenic, and they fear that she became mentally ill after she had children, and they fear that would happen to them, or I don't know. There's
whatever reasons.
We don't know what their reasons are. It's none of our business.
I think it's really hard for people, though, to not think it's our business. I think that we're trained by this culture that's running the place right now that every woman's reproductive life is our business. We want to be in charge of everything to do with every little fetus, you know, from making reporting miscarriages to saying that conception, you know, starts at fertilization. That means that we have to have birth certificate.
No, I agree with the keeping out of it. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, you know, when I heard the thing about the gallbladder, about protesting, about that sort of thing, that kind of got my back up. I think for some women, for many women, it's not an easy decision.
Well, the reason I brought that up is I was comparing it to, in terms of privacy. Like, it's none of my business whether, you know, men who are cheating on their wives are using Viagra to, you know, or whether they, you know, whatever. It's none of my business if they choose to go and have a tummy tuck or a butt lift. It's just none of my business, and it shouldn't be any of my neighbor's business or anybody else's business if I choose to have an abortion or a tubal ligation or any of those things. I wasn't equating it with the same emotional impact.
Yeah.
I think it's always good
to be really clear on that, because sometimes it sounds like, in fact, you're saying there's no more emotional impact to anyone than having their tonsils out. And that's really not true.
For me, I didn't find that my abortion had any more emotional impact than any other medical procedure I've ever had. But that may not be true for other people.
And because everyone relates to it.
I'm just kind of curious. I mean, you said you had an abortion. I don't know how old you are now.
Yes, I did.
But do you ever think about, you know, if you hadn't had an abortion now?
Yes, I do. And I'm so glad that I had it for a lot of reasons. The man involved adamantly did not want it. Our relationship wasn't doing all that well. I wasn't in any position to financially support that child. Not only that, I had had, without realizing I was pregnant, I had had several full series of pelvic x-rays during the period that the fetus was 6 to 8 weeks along, which is not good. And so I felt that my decision was a good one, and I still feel it was a good one, and I don't think that it would have been a positive for me to have that child.
Okay. I know, I agree with the privacy thing. I guess my point is I think it for many people it's a very difficult decision, and I just don't think it should be taken very lightly.
It is, and I think it's a harder decision when you don't quite know what to decide either.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also a harder decision when the political climate mm-hmm. has chosen very deliberate tactics of shaming.
Yeah.
And attaching a huge stigma
that really confuses
to
people.
The procedure. And, you know, I without that, it's, you know, every woman is left to really search her own choices, what's best for her life, to reckon, you know, what her philosophy is, what her spiritual path is, what, you know, what her friends say, what she believes is right for herself. And it's always a decision where you're weighing out all of those factors. To be able to do that with, you know, alone, without any external state-regulated forces coming down mm-hmm. on you, is hard enough for most women. You know, then to have the milieu that we're swimming in now of the stigma and the shame that's being really just preached from many of our elected officials throughout state legislatures across the land is just compounding the problem exponentially.
Mm-hmm. You know, okay. Ursula Le Guin is a writer from Oregon.
Yes.
And
great.
She spoke at the NARAL banquet a couple years ago, and she said something I felt to be so true that you miss in the whole conversation about abortion. She had an abortion when she was younger, before she graduated from college, before she traveled, before she met her future husband, before she learned the skills that was going to make her a great writer. And she had actually two abortions, I think, in her 20s.
That was pre-Roe, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was a big deal. And this is what she had to say. She said, you know, the worst thing about the people who would have wanted me to have to continue those pregnancies and bear those children, create those children, is that I wouldn't have had the two children I had later on who are my heart. You know, I mean, because we have 200,000 eggs inside of us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they'd all want to come out and play. But we can only let a couple out. So it behooves us and our children to figure out what the best time for that is. I mean, there's not a best time, but certainly to eliminate the bad times.
I was going to say there are
and,
better times.
And, you know, and likewise, if I had not had the abortions that I had with a man who was battering when I was a youngster, then I wouldn't have the two beautiful spirits that I have raised, you know, that are my children. I wouldn't have had them. You know, I mean, and that's the way, so they wanted to take my children away from me. That's how I can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ready to have kids then. If it had been up to them, I would have been forced to have those kids, and my children, who I have now, would have been ripped from me.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. It's very true. Thanks for your call.
Which is
thank
all
you.
About choice.
Good show. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You know, before we get back to it, I want to let you know what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9, we're going to hear the Friday Radio Zine, and guests will include local writer Doug Lane, who's the author of Last Week's Apocalypse. He's launching the release of his book with sponsorship from Education Without Borders, and the proceeds from the sales will go to Books Not Bombs Project for Katrina victims. Also hear from documentary filmmaker Penny Lane, who is very coincidentally showing her film Abortion Stories this week in Portland. We'll also interview the director of a film called Music Is My Life, Politics Is My Mistress, about the life of poet, singer, and activist Oscar Brown Jr. It's playing tonight at the Guild. And an interview with Marjorie Kowalski-Cole, who's the author of a new political novel called Correcting the Landscape. At 10:30, the KBOO Report, with reports on the Venezuelan youth community radio movement and the African Film Festival. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, topics include the coverage of the Hamas victory in the Middle East and American automobile companies slashing jobs. Don't go away. stay tuned. We're just going to be doing it for you all day long here on Community Radio.
All right, let's go ahead and take another caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the caller that called a while ago that kind of shocked me, and as did your response, although because the guy was such a obvious misogynist scumbag, I wasn't surprised by the response. But I just wanted to say first off that I'm male, obviously, and I'm very well aware that men long ago usurped and more or less enslaved women via taking control of women's fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very aware of that, so I want to be clear about that.
Okay.
I'm also someone who, with someone that I loved very much, who I consider to be my soulmate, we made a decision when we were younger that she needed to have an herbal abortion, which went through, and that would still impact me to this day. So with all that said, I wanted to say that while I thought that guy was a total scumbag and appalling, especially the 14-year-old girl comment, which, considering the population I work with, horrifies me on a very personal level.
Mm-hmm.
But he brought up a point which I think is often overlooked, which is that at what point do men, other than wearing a condom, which mm-hmm. could just as easily have been thrown in the face of a woman who's gotten pregnant, although except for in the case of non-consensual sex, mm-hmm. of course. But at what point do men have power in these decisions of life and death, other than just the sex act? I'm just curious as to what your thoughts
that one
are.
First. You know, and we might have three different answers. I don't know.
You answer first.
But I'll take a stab at that because I've answered that question a couple times. In my opinion, because of, you know, I love the phrase biology is not destiny,
mm-hmm.
except in this one example, I can say that it is because of our biology and how, in fact, women are the carriers of fetuses into, you know, then birthing babies, because women have the biological responsibility of doing that, women need to be the gatekeepers and to allow or disallow mm-hmm. those babies from being born.
Mm-hmm.
And because it affects her body and her health for the rest of her life, you know, in some varying degree or another, it is her choice. And, you know, if you are wanting very much to have a child and the woman is not, it is her body that is going to pay the price for carrying that child and birthing that child, not the man's.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it is her choice. If a man really, really wants to raise and have a child and can't find a partner to do that with,
he can adopt.
Then I would, look into that adoption phenomenon.
I think that you actually totally backwards my point. My point was, although I don't want to associate uh-huh. myself in any way with that guy, was quite similar to that guy. What if I don't want to have
it? Oh, that's what I thought you meant. Personally, on my internet forum, we've had extensive conversations mm-hmm. about what if the guy wants to opt out, and of course, in American uh-huh. legal system, that's not an option today, but I do think that men should have a chance to, you know, early on, the woman says, hey, guess what, Joe, I'm pregnant. And Joe should have the right to say, I really, really don't want this baby. If you decide you want to have it, you're on your own. I want nothing to do with it. And I personally think that the time has come for us to look at how we could make that possible and somehow give the woman some other kind of support, societal support. Of course, that would cause a huge
I was going to say, now the societal support piece would need to be in place
for that.
Right.
Because, of course.
Unfortunately,
of course.
We have not yet achieved equality in this great land of ours.
Yes.
And women still earn a whole lot less.
But I do think that
economic opportunities available.
I do think that men, you know, ought to have a chance very early on, not changeable, to say, I don't want to do it. No, not going to help out, not going to go there.
Right.
But that's just my personal opinion.
Right, well, because I guess that's where I was going to go, is it seems like at least you should have the ability to sever economic obligations if the other person wants to have it and you don't.
Yes.
And if society is there to,
absolutely.
To be there for the woman and things
absolutely.
Are a little bit different.
And I agree, and I just wanted to, I realize this is a highly explosive and sensitive topic, which my final comment is that as important as I think it is, and I think that actually it's a response to women's impact on politics, which has been, in my opinion, largely positive you know, with a few exceptions, Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah.
You know, but oh, I think it's been almost completely, it's been just an incredibly positive and helpful thing for the species. And what a shock that 51% of our species suddenly being included in the political process would be a good thing. How surprising is that?
Yeah.
But I think that one thing is that I think that this is a real splitter issue that's used routinely by the powers that be to split us, and I want to remind everyone out there, if we sink into dictatorship, if you really think Roe's going to be around when the Constitution's gone, well, that's pretty optimistic. So for all the women out there who are really worried about this, keep your eyes on the total prize, which is our collective freedom, in addition to the fact that women's freedom must be defended at all costs.
Right on.
I will leave it there. Thank you, ladies.
Thanks.
As always, a great show.
Thank you. This harkens back to some people in the past who correctly, in my opinion, said that feminism is human rights, not just the rights of women. And I think that's very true.
Absolutely. And to just sort of further that, I think that when we look at reproductive rights, which is really what I'm absolutely in favor of, it goes so far beyond abortion rights and hits on that last question about societal support. It has always struck me as, well, if it wasn't so damn sick and sad, ironic, I suppose, would be a good word. But sick and sad just can't really be separated in my mind.
Sick,
from
sad
this.
World, you know.
That the same folks that were blockading the clinic I was working at, the same folks that were yelling all sorts of horrible things at all folks going in or out of the clinic, regardless of what they were going in or out for, were the same folks that were, say, anti-welfare or anti, you know, governmental supports of children that were then born.
How about that?
This makes me go,
punishing.
Huh, this is not about, the sanctity of life so much as it's about punishing and controlling women.
So from the time of conception to the time of birth, you're sacred and
you're
holy.
You're sacred.
And after
then you're
that,
born, and that's original sin. I don't know. Tainted. I don't know. It's ironic, it's sad, it's crazy, is what it is. And we just really, I think, owe it to ourselves to not just protect the rights to abortion, but to actually, I'm looking forward to the day that we can once again be proactive in actually looking at the full range of reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. And that means, looking at societal support mechanisms for children once born. It means looking at sex education and access to birth control. That means, a whole lot more than just the access to abortion. But the access to abortion right now must be safeguarded at all costs.
Well, and reproductive rights goes even beyond the whole idea of birth control and can I have an abortion or et cetera. I mean, to me, reproductive rights includes things like, for example, I am at the age when I'm suffering from perimenopause. A lot of women are in my same shoes. I have, a number of symptoms that I find troubling, and I've discussed the possibility of having hysterectomy with my physician. Or he says, oh, no, we wouldn't even consider that, because your symptoms aren't this, they're not severe enough and blah, blah, blah. Well, isn't that special? Here's a guy telling me that my menopausal symptoms aren't severe enough for me to have my own uterus removed. I personally think that women should have the right to elect that surgery if they deem that their symptoms are troubling enough and it's not medically contraindicated. But, I think reproductive rights go way further than we've given them meaning so far.
That
you know?
Gets to the heart of, infantilizing
mm-hmm,
women.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
But that's built into the healthcare system.
I was going to say, that's really built into Western medicine.
Yeah, and since this particular coverage that I have is through a charity program, I don't have a whole lot of room to argue and maneuver, which is unfortunate. And I think there's a lot of women in my position where, we rely on the goodwill of our physicians to allow us to have access to the health care that we deem that we
yep.
want and need. It goes way beyond just abortion.
Well, we
just
got
abortion.
14 minutes left. The bases are loaded. We got callers lined up. Let's see how many folks we can talk to. Good morning. You're on the air.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, great. I got to run out the door, but I have to just bring this up. Have you heard of or can you talk about that very secret and sacred society that their practice, their main focus was period extraction.
Menstrual extraction. I was going to ask Jane about that. Whatever happened to menstrual extraction?
Okay, thanks. I'm going to go and listen.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, menstrual extraction was a way to do an abortion before abortions were legal. If a woman missed her period by a few days, she would go in to have a menstrual extraction. And that was you just use an extra small little suction tube, little cannula, and do the one-minute little suctioning of the uterus, which is what a modern suction abortion is. And but of course this was too early, so you wouldn't see any pregnancy material like a little placenta or something. You would just see a little blood. But this was this went out when abortion became legal, because then you could do the procedure in a safer way, which is to wait a few more weeks until you can see a placenta, so you will be watching out for the people who have tubal pregnancies.
Awesome,
and
that's
more people
why.
Live. Yeah.
Because it seems, I know at the time, early on in the 70s, I worked at a feminist women's health center for a few months, and at the time, people were talking about menstrual extraction as a modern alternative to, you know, the messy inconvenience of having one's menstrual period and having to deal with all that sort of thing, that, you know, you could either have it done or even do it to yourself every month, have your extract your menses and not have to go through all that, you know, carrying pads around and sort of thing. And it seemed like that, you know, was it, they were, at the time, women felt it was, you know, a viable alternative to, you know, just having the normal menses. And mm-hmm. apparently that's sort of fallen to the wayside. But wouldn't that be handy if one could do that?
Yeah, I'd have to see a study, because
it would certainly,
you know,
be
you
more
don't
convenient.
Know if
yes.
you really could eliminate, because
yeah.
that sort of
yes.
seepage
it might not
that's
be
coming
healthy.
Through mm-hmm. The endometrium over a period of a couple of days, mm-hmm. and it might not be like everything's right there, you
yes.
know, during
right.
your little DNC.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
And, you know, personally, I love my periods.
I was going to say, I don't consider periods messy and convenient things
well,
to just sort of deal
I know some
with.
People do, but
some
we
people
have
do.
Our own take
I,
on that, just like everything else.
I have to say, I do believe from my personal experience and talking to many other women about this that you're in the minority. But
that's
okay.
That's probably true.
Oh, well, what can you do?
Everybody has their own opinion about
that's
it.
Right.
You know?
That's right.
Let's go ahead and take another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Roe versus Wade, that was based on our right to privacy, right?
It was
right.
based on Griswold, which Griswold versus Connecticut, which asserted that there was a right to privacy.
Okay,
yeah.
And the right to privacy is the Fourth Amendment? Or what? Or an amendment to the
yes.
Constitution?
Yes.
Okay. I want to share with you something I saw on TV. I haven't been able to kill my TV completely, but
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty close to it. But I saw a Law and Order episode just a couple days ago that guy that used to be the senator, and he's playing on that Thompson. And there was a discussion about Roe v. Wade. He says he said it was based in bad law. And he displayed the Constitution. He says because nowhere in the Constitution does it say that you have a right to privacy.
Well, I addressed that a little earlier going on the remarks. Tom Hartman discussed this at great length on his show a few weeks ago. And he pointed out he's made quite a study of the Founding Fathers and their writings, their letters, their thinking. And at the time, the term privacy was used in conjunction with, you know, privacy meant being alone to use toilet facilities. And the Fourth Amendment says that the persons have the right to be secure in their persons and homes and papers. That's what they meant. That was their wording for privacy. That's what they meant by that. And it's clear if you read their letters, et cetera, and read their speeches and correspondence at the time that that is what they had in mind. Now, Griswold, as I said, was determined before Roe, and then Roe was based on Griswold. So there's been a lot of effort expressed that there have been people who have been hoping to overturn Griswold. Now, because then Roe would fall. Now, if they overturn Griswold, that would also mean that the sodomy laws would be okay. You could have anti-sodomy laws, that there would be no such thing as consenting adults doing things in the
bedroom,
privacy
yeah.
of their own home,
right.
that would all be blown.
Right.
So Griswold is actually what a lot of the right-wingers would like to get rid of, because it's the cornerstone for a lot of these illegitimate freedoms, is the way they see it, that we enjoy now.
Well, my point was that the propaganda that I saw on this award-winning show, it just slapped me in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Where
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
that's what shocked me. I
yeah.
don't know that much about it. I've been blessed. I've never been pregnant, so
right.
so thank you.
Thank you
Thanks
very much.
Bye bye.
Hey, my fabulous, beloved, and adorable partner Teresa ran an article into us just a little bit ago And it's about that filibuster that Melody and I were having the brief disagreement earlier about, is there any hope? I just want to read bits and pieces from this as we have just about 8 minutes left. Senate Republican leaders plan to confirm Supreme Court nominee Alito early next week after dealing with a filibuster threat from Democrats who worry that the conservative judge would swing the court too far to the right. A final vote making the New Jersey jurist the nation's 110th Supreme Court justice was scheduled for Tuesday morning, only hours before Bush begins his State of the Union address to Congress. If Alito's bipartisan supporters succeed in rounding up 60 votes to cut off debate on Monday. Republicans don't seem worried. 52 of their 55-member majority and three Democrats, Byrd, Johnson, and Nelson, are already publicly supporting Alito's confirmation.
They should be ashamed of themselves.
Yes.
Especially Byrd.
A lot of them. Biden, a Democratic supporter who plans to vote against Alito's confirmation, said this morning that he thought the chances of a successful filibuster were dim and doesn't support the idea. Other folks have also said they would not filibuster. However, Edward Kennedy is still trying to get support for a filibuster.
As well, he should.
And he says, you know, there's some division in the caucus. It's an uphill climb at the current time, but it is still achievable. And with that thin ray of hope, I would again encourage people to vociferously, like way vociferously, let us make our voices known to the senators that a filibuster is necessary to stop this nomination. Alito is a threat to our freedoms, period. He is a threat on so many counts, from the support for the unitary executive
to—I
mean, I love that phrase. You know, to reproductive freedoms, to family leave acts, to immigrant rights. I mean, Alito is a threat.
It's spelled so, unitary executive, but it's pronounced fascist dictatorship.
Yeah, yeah. So let's with that call. Call a lot. Call all of
them. Not just Biden. Call Kennedy and congratulate him for pushing it.
Right.
Call all the Democrats who are planning on voting no if you can. If you can't afford it, send them emails. Call.
But you
email,
can afford
email,
it, right?
Email.
Because there's that 800 switchboard number.
Yes.
And that switchboard
The SOB number is disconnected.
But there's
another
others.
One. I don't remember it. It starts with 866.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Okay, it'll be at the front desk here at KABU, I swear, moments after the show. There are 800 switchboard numbers. You can call your elected representatives.
Funny how they don't
please.
Promote those. Openly.
I know.
It's not interesting.
But you
yeah.
can call them, and let's just say you should. Let's go ahead and take another call. We have only 5 minutes left. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes,
can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. And I won't stay on too long. You know what? I feel very fortunate that I haven't had to make that decision. It has to be a difficult one, but I tell you from personal experience, as an adoptee, I think abortion is far preferable to adoption.
I've heard that
from
a lot of adoptees.
How can, that's a big nasty secret in our world.
Okay.
A big nasty secret in our world, and if you look at the treatment centers, the prisons, blah, 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 and it's just, I mean, how, okay, so she didn't have the abortion. But she threw the baby on the reject pile.
Yeah, thank you.
How cool
yeah.
is that?
Right
thank
on.
You. Right on.
Do I talk about emotional problems?
Uh-huh.
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 And thanks so much for taking my call.
Oh,
and,
thank you for calling.
Thanks
and
for bringing that up.
That actually gives me a moment.
That word. Yeah.
It gives me a moment to give my anecdotal story. When I was working at Feminist Women's Health Center, we just noticed as we were all sort of sitting there talking at the lunch table one day that in fact out of I think it was about six women present, half of us were adopted. And
how about that?
We thought, what statistically are the chances that, you know, such a large number of the folks working at this particular clinic were adoptees, considering our population, you know, considering the number of us in the general population. And with that, I started asking people who were actively working on protecting abortion rights, and many of us were adoptees. I, myself, am an adoptee. My adopted family, God knows, were very supportive, very nice people, raised me lovely. All power to them. And however, yes, you always have that, wow, I got laid in a different nest and my other mother ran away.
Yeah, you feel like a cowbird.
One of these things is not like the other. And that is a sense that stays with you. And, you know, happily I had a great therapist. I worked great with her. But again, you know, that is with you, that whole initial rejection and growing up knowing that you ain't a part of this, even
Thanks for bringing that up.
That was a really great point. And I've heard that from a lot of other adoptees as well. Not that they wish that they'd been aborted, but
No, I like my life. Don't get me wrong.
Being adopted is a tough road to walk.
Whenever I hear people say, well, if you don't want to have the baby, give it to someone else that wants it. It's not that simple.
Well, it's also not that simple to go through a pregnancy. It's not just like, you know, walking around for 9 months and then, oh, yeah, well, okay, cool. It has a profound permanent effect on your body and your health, et cetera, et cetera.
And I talk to the birth mothers who now, it's 4 years later, they're having an abortion because every night when they go to bed, they dream that their baby is being sexually abused.
Right.
They worry forever. I mean, It's very sad on both ends.
And that was the next point I wanted to make. When I was reunited with my birth mother, you know, we found each other when I was, you know, 20-ish or something. And really, the first thing out of her mouth, well, okay, simultaneously we looked at each other and said, long time no see. That was the first thing out of her mouth.
That's pretty funny.
Which gave me sort of that sense of belonging that I never had prior to that very moment, which is something, you know, to think about, too. Wow. And but the next thing out of her mouth was, did I do the right thing? Are you okay? And to know that that woman had worried for 20 years about what was happening to me, and that she always sort of felt I was there somewhere, what was happening, and she wasn't able to protect me or help me or get whatever.
Right.
You know, that's wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong to deal with pregnancies in this way. Open adoption, and other plans where birth moms are included in some way,
I think,
you know, can mitigate that.
Definitely superior.
But the mid-60s style of deposit the kid and run.
And then hide
so
who you are. Let me give that number for NARAL one more time. If you're energized to work to preserve what's left of our reproductive freedoms, call 503-223-4510. And I really want to thank you, Jane, for on such short notice coming down and being a fabulous guest and helping us to spread the word about this. And thanks for all the work you do every day for women. I really appreciate
it. You're quite welcome.
I'm so glad you're there. And all of you out there, don't just sit on your hands. This is big time. We've got to do something about this if we want to continue to have any rights in this country. Be active, be positively revolting, and you know, you'll get the country that you deserve, and we all need to make work to make it happen.